Yes. All right. Awesome. Okay, well, welcome. Without further ado, this is Jeroen from OpenEO, and he's going to be talking about some cool OpenEO stuff.
Yep. Hi, thanks for coming. So OpenEO, quick recap of what it is and why we started the project. It's an H2020 project funded by European Union. And it started when, of course, due to the paradigm shift that we had an Earth observation of processing moving towards the data and moving towards cloud, you see multiple organizations starting to build processing platforms on their respective clouds. And of course, that ends up with a bit of a problem because users are isolated in the platform that they use, but they cannot easily switch platforms. It's harder to reproduce work, etc. It's a fairly well-known problem, and also the solution is fairly well-known. That is, of course, to build a standard. So that's the core of OpenEO. It's an API specification. But when we conceived the project, we immediately said, like, okay, no, we don't want just the API. It's very important that we, from the start, start building backend software, multiple backend implementations, actually, and also multiple client implementations. So, because that's what you need to get a standard that actually works. You can only verify it by implementing it. And so when we talk about OpenEO, it's also that part that we think is very important. Another important part is, of course, the open part. We conceived it as a basically an open source project. So the community was very important to us, and also the aspect of community building. Therefore, one example of that is that also the API itself is developed in GitHub as a project there in an open source way, and it's based on open API specification. So while normally when you think of a standard, it's lots of documents, we tried, well, it's still documented, of course, that's important, but we tried to make it easier for users. So from the open API specification, we generate the nice documentation with examples. We try to explain it very well. And also, a very important part of the OpenEO specification is actually the processes itself. So whereas, for instance, in WPS, you know how to invoke a process and how to define it, but they don't define the processes. And an integral part of OpenEO is actually the processes themselves. So you see them here. We have a whole list of them, and they're also in the repository. Another aspect that we took into account is, of course, data cubes. Everybody knows they're quite convenient. For us, it means that you're not dealing with files anymore. You don't have to open files and write files. You get pixels being aligned automatically when, for instance, doing multi-sensor data fusion. And of course, scalability is also important. That is, of course, not a property of a standard, but more of a backend implementation. But at least the standard tries not to get in the way of scalability. So that's enough for the maybe more boring stuff. So let's try to show what it actually looks like at this stage. So I built a demo in my Jupyter lab. That's where I usually do my small code experiments. The demo is also available online. And in this demo, it's about trying to process some Sentinel-2 data for an agriculture use case, and mostly about the pre-processing part, because the other stuff simply isn't finished yet. In the demo, I will be using the backend that we host at Vito. Wait, I have to see how to scroll down here. Good. And the first thing you do when, first you need to have a backend URL. OpenEO is a web service, so you need to paste URL. You specify the web service, Then you can list collections if you want. And a collection is like a Google Earth Engine image collection or a layer. You find the ID and you connect to it. It's lazy, so I just did that, but nothing really important happened because we are still specifying what we data we want to access and so on. And the next thing I want to do in the demo is I want to use a nice vegetation index called the Enhanced Vegetation Index, which has still a relatively simple mathematical formula. And the Python client of OpenEO allows me to use mathematical operators to express that. So we were a bit inspired by tools like NumPy and Pandas to really make the client-side code look very elegant and normal to researchers that like to work like this. When we run this cell, in fact, we don't really do any processing yet. This is, again, what's happening in the background. What OpenEO does for us is it constructs what we call a process graph, which is just a graph representation of our small workflow. And if we draw it like this, then yeah, you really see it that multiple elements are combined. And that's what makes it possible to send the same graph to multiple backends that should give the same result. So that's how it looks like internally. It's more complex than the client-side code. So this is mostly for the developers working on the OpenEO tools themselves. Okay, now I want to actually see my image. I have a nice download method for that. I'm not going to be adventurous and run it live, given that the connection may not be so good here. And I get this image. At this point, there's a bit of a problem. You see that there are some white areas, that's clouds being removed, but there's still some cloud left at the edges. That's a well-known problem with Sentinel-2. If you use the Sentinel-2 scene classification, then you don't get, not all clouds are filtered out. So a very traditional step is then to use some cloud masking. I have the scene classification layer available, and I also have these nice logical operators that I can apply to construct my mask. That gives me a simple binary mask. And now I'm going to do something more complicated, because if I use this, then still I will have cloud in my image. So I'm going to kind of like blur it out a bit to extend the mask beyond the pixels that are marked as cloud into the pixels that are maybe clouds. So it's a bit of fuzzy logic here. And I'm going to apply a caution using a 2D convolution operation. And in OpenEO, that's just called apply kernel. And the kernel itself is constructed using SciPy. So when we look at that result here, you see that my raw images on the right. And in the middle, you see that I now have some more cloud removed. And here is the fuzzy mask that I applied. So OpenEO allows me to retrieve that all in real time. So I actually have the timings here in the notebook. Okay, so that's on image level. Actually, I can also, OpenEO also allows me to create a viewing service. That's quite nice. So you can say, hey, OpenEO, give me a WMTS so I can browse my map a bit. That's not in the demo yet. But I'm going to continue with looking at some time series. So now I'm going to look into time. And first, I will aggregate, take the average pixel values inside a polygon that corresponds to an agricultural field, and plot that somewhere here. And I plot the data with my mask applied and without. And although my masked values are a bit better, it's not yet smooth. So now I want to go for a more complex smoothing operation. but I'm lazy, I don't like complex, so I'm going to use something that's already available in SciPy, which is an algorithm called the Savitsky-Golay filter. Now, thing is, well, no, first let's apply it on the time series. So the green line looks a bit smoother already, so I'm happy with that. But now I want to do that on the pixel level, but without actually having to re-implement it in terms of OpenEO predefined functions. And for that, OpenEO has a very nice feature called user-defined functions, or UDFs, where you can simply write a piece of Python code that can reuse libraries and send that to the backend, which is then run either on a single pixel or on a time series of pixel, depending on how you specify or which function you use. So I'm going to show the UDF. I load it from a file here. It's a bit of Python code. The input is actually NumPy arrays. It can use pandas, and it can use the SciPy Savitsky-Golay filter. And I have this nice apply dimension method available in OpenEO that I'm going to apply, run on my data cube, and then extract the time series. And then we get this result. Maybe I should have shown the compared it with applying it on the polygon, but actually it's already again a bit better. And the nice thing is that if I now download an image, no, that's gone. Normally here there should be an image, but that's probably not going to happen anymore. Yeah, time is short, so let's not wait for that. Good, back to the presentation. So those were already a few important features, capabilities of OpenEO, but there's more that's already implemented or planned to be implemented. An important one is batch processing. All of the operations I showed was happening on the fly because they were small, working on smaller bits of data. Although the backend that I used is using GeoTrellis and Spark, so it's scalable, it can process more. But of course, a web request can time out. So if you have requests going on that will take multiple minutes, then you can do batch processing. And there we are looking at, for instance, retrieving time series for 10,000 of fields by running a batch process. Machine learning is, of course, something very important. Another nice one is that we are connecting with Sentinel Hub. Those guys have done a ton of work in integrating numerous Earth observation data layers, and we don't want to redo that, so we just integrated it into the backend so that we can offer layers that will fetch the data from there. And another one is, of course, integrating more higher level algorithms than the ones you have seen here. So maybe doing image segmentation, a lot of machine learning algorithms are in that category, or maybe atmospheric correction, typical Earth observation things. To wrap up, there's also some other nice tooling being developed. One is the hub that lists all of the available backends. And the nice thing about these backends is that a lot of them are really built on open source components. For instance, the UREC WCPS backend is built on Resdaman. We have Mundialis running on their Actinia platform that uses CRAS internally. And yeah, ours is built on top of the GeoTrellis library, which is also on a location tech project. And we aggregate all of them into the hub to make it easy for users to find. Then there's the editor of OpenEO. That's also a nice tool. Oh, no, back. Yeah. There, people can have an online workspace where they can also construct these process graphs. Here, using the the boxes. It's clearer over there. And then they can create, for instance, a web service out of that and browse a map. This one is using the Google Earth Engine. So we also expose some of the functionality that's in Google Earth Engine, but through the open interface. Okay, yep, back to the slideshow. And that's it. thank you. Any questions? I don't see the audience so well. So.
All right, down here in front. We'll repeat the questions.
Yep.
Is there any way to run these computations on a GPU?
Okay, so the question went straight.
Yeah, the question was if there is any way to run the computations on the GPU. Currently, there is no backend that does that, to my knowledge. But the nice thing is, of course, that we can. Yeah, indeed, and also machine learning, for instance. So that's what we are looking at Phyto and are very interested in. So we already have some Spark custom Spark algorithms that use GPU, but exposing that through the OpenEO interface, maybe even in a very transparent manner, would really be nice to have. Yeah. Hi.
Just a question, are these applications already deployed to the VS infrastructure?
Yep, that's another one. Actually, not already at the moment, but we hope to have it in 2 weeks or so. So we've been working on it for some months. And actually, that's also the Phyto backend that we are deploying there. So some backends are more tied to a specific data center than others, because they already have a lot of infrastructure in there. But we are also looking at deploying it on Dias. So it should hopefully not take too long anymore. Yeah, so the question was that we indeed expose Google Earth Engine layers and how we integrate. So the nice thing is actually that Google is part of the project, although they are not funded, but they are a partner. So they were so nice to help us out a little bit by basically answering our questions. So the Google Earth Engine backend is built by Munster University. And they were, I mean, Google was helping them out, telling them how to best interface. But basically, they're translating to the Earth Engine web API, I believe. And that backend is also available open source, so I think you can even look it up.
Thank you again, Jeroen.
Thank you. I stay here then.